Hello, and welcome to Long Time No See, the podcast. Each week, we'll be pairing two blindfolded comedians who've agreed to sit down with a mystery guest. I'll be putting them on the spot with a series of questions about their careers, lives, and opinions. Without further ado, please remove your blindfolds and introduce yourself.
Hey, I'm Michael.
Hi, Andrea.
I have to be honest with you, I am so relieved to see it's you.
Do you have any irrational fears? What's the worst fad you were into? Is there any job that you would be terrible at?
Underwater welder?
Don't say that about yourself.
Do you guys have any useless talents?
I kicked one of those delivery robots.
What? You kicked one?
Yelling. I kick those all the time.
They have names on them.
Good.
I can make smoke come out of my mouth with nothing.
Do it.
You want to see it?
What the f***? Are you a dragon?
Out now, Long Time No See the Podcast, Season 2. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Styles McKenzie helping you make those rooms sing. Today's style tip: when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild, like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Arr, fierce. This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey, welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith with... It's the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org. Consequence and the Consequence Podcast Network. So happy you made it here. Hit that subscribe button if you're not already. You get new interviews just like this one sent to you every single week. Spotify, Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org. Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcast from, you can subscribe to Kyle Meredith with. Please do give the series a rating, leave a review while you're at it if you feel so inspired. We've had some great guests lately. Alan Walker was here to talk about the Walker World 2.0. We did a rewind back to Gary Brooker, the late Gary Brooker of Procol Harum, and Randy Bachman of BTO and the Guess Who. Zara Larson, she's got a new album. She dropped by to talk about it. Seth MacFarlane, of course, of Family Guy and American Dad and Ted and his entire empire. He also is a crooner, and we talked about Frank Sinatra while he was here. Shirley Manson of Garbage, Mark Hamill of Star Wars fame, Finn Wolfhard of Stranger Things. They've all been dropping by. Just an example of what you get when you subscribe to the Kyle Meredith With podcast. That's me, Kyle Meredith. Today, it's a special rewind episode. I'm looking back on 3 different interviews, 2 with Dean Wareham and 1 with his musical partner and wife, Britta Phillips. Now, of course, before they were the patron saints of dreamy duets, Dean and Britta were indie royalty in their own separate galaxies. Dean cut his teeth with Galaxy 500 before forming Luna, a band that specialized in the kind of jangly late-night melancholia that made you wish like you smoked in bed. And then Britta Phillips, meanwhile, had already been a legit pop culture footnote. She was literally the singing voice of Jim. Of Jim and the Holograms, then went on to play bass in the proto shoegaze group Ultra Baby Fats, and then joined Luna in the early 2000s. And somewhere between the bass lines and the backstage passes, romance bloomed, the band ended, and Dean and Britta were then born. And together they've scored Warhol screen tests, resurrected French pop gems, and made minimalist psych sound like the soundtrack to a Godard film on Quaaludes. Little Surgeon Jane, Little Sonic Boom, just enough Brooklyn art scene cool to keep the whole thing floating somewhere above street level. And I've had some great talks with them over the years. In fact, so this rewind, like I said, it's 3 conversations across a handful of years to talk solo albums, Luna reunions, and songwriting that sometimes doubles as emotional excavation. Now, Dean, coming off of Galaxy 500 and Luna, we first met up in 2014 to talk about finally releasing his first solo album at that time and what it meant to step out from the comfort of collaboration, including with wife and longtime musical partner Britta, and work with My Morning Jacket's Jim James as a producer. He dug into the funny backlash from his memoir, Navigating Identity Beyond Legacy Bands, and why a lyric like, "What have I done with my life?" doesn't always need a worried reading. And that's where we'll start part one of this Dean and Britta Rewind from 2014 backstage at the Big Ears Festival. It's Kyle Meredith with Dean Wareham.
Good afternoon.
How are you?
I'm pretty good. My voice is a little low from this chest infection. I'm trying to
good
get
posture.
A doctor.
Yeah.
Posture.
And we should say this is the beautiful Tennessee Theater here in Knoxville. This place is gorgeous.
It's not a bad little club.
Yeah, built in 1929.
Is that right?
We found out. Yeah, and probably refurbished sometime recently. Is
built in 29. Sure.
I was thinking if someone were just. You know, surprisingly transported here in the time machine and just arrived right now. Other than the lights, it wouldn't be.
That's true.
You know, it's like this, it still looks like it would.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Well, let's talk about you because that's why we're here right now. You've got the solo record out. Finally. And that's the popular question, right?
That's true.
And maybe we shouldn't say why the solo record now, but why wasn't there ever a solo record before this? It isn't so much what happened now, but you've had all these chances. And sure, you've been in bands, and you know we can do the name check, the roll call with Galaxy 500 and Luna and Dean and Britta, but now here you are. So it happened now, but why didn't it ever happen before?
Why now is always the question, really.
Yeah, and I'm when trying I wrote to a, change that a little bit.
No, it's
bit.
Okay, because when I wrote a book, it was like, why now? I remember doing an interview, and I was like, I should have prepared for that.
Yeah.
I should know.
Because it's what you do next. That's why it is. It's what you do next.
Yeah. Well, I was busy with the bands for a long, long time, and I didn't really feel a need to do a solo album because I was just so identified with both Galaxy 500 and with Luna. I did start to make a solo album in about 2001 or 2002 after I think it had been six Luna albums in a row, and I was like, I'll make a solo. But then it turned into a Dean and Britta album instead. And that was kind of fun.
Which we all love. You know what?
I think often the record you make is a reaction of what you've just been doing. So after making a couple of Dean and Britta albums, which are covers and duets, kind of sort of there's only so far you can take that maybe until it's kind of a formula. And I wanted to do something more male, maybe more R-O-C-K a little bit.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and it's a beautiful record. You seem to have that habit of making these beautiful records.
Oh, thank you.
And I guess it's a bit different because you've always had that. There's one side of you that's the art side.
Right.
And there's one side of you that's the pop side. And it's come out in your various projects, but this seems like the first time where you can hear all of that in one. Like, there was no real compromising, you know?
Right.
You have some of those artists. Like, I think of Beck. Beck seems to be a guy who can only make a slow record or a trippy record.
Right.
You know, he has figured out, but this seems like your version of, you've put it all together finally.
Well, I hope you're right. this is probably more, I feel like this is more, a couple of songs anyway, more poppy than any, like, I mean, that's the single Dancer Disappears.
Yeah, yeah.
When I listen to that. When we were recording that song, our drummer would tell me that it sounded like Springsteen doing Santa Claus is Coming to Town.
I'm not sure that's probably the direction you're going.
Don't say that.
Yeah. Although he's made a lot of money off that version.
I know. Santa Claus is coming to town.
Yeah, it could be you.
Maybe a little.
Well, I guess the difference is, though, and what I'm curious about with this record, too, is for your entire career up to this point, it's been a collaboration, whether it's been in a band or with Britta.
Right.
This time you had Jim James produce it, and I would feel like that's still a collaboration.
Yes, it's true. It is it is still a collaboration. So it's not like, I'm not the kind of person who goes into the studio and tells people, like, you play this and you do this, and I've got every little part written out.
Right.
I really
right.
depend on the musicians around me, because I'm not that trained. But Jim had... Jim really pulled some of these songs to pieces. Some of them that were like soft, quiet, acoustic things, he turned into what he called bangers.
To get the, you know, bringing it down. So, I mean, it seems like at some point you could have just said, we're a band. This is Dean and Jim.
That's true.
Dean and Jimma. Yeah. Whatever it is, you know, it could have. He's not even, we don't know him as a producer, so it almost seems like he would be having to get his feet, his producing
yeah,
feet at the same time that he's
I guess
working
he's
with
just
you.
Starting to get into that, but he's a whiz in the studio. Mm-hmm. And he's a good producer because he plays an instrument. He plays several instruments. He plays guitars and keyboards, so he's able to talk to
and he claims sax
musicians. I've seen him with that toy saxophone on stage. The one sound that's on this record and is on his record too, which is the mellotron sax, which is you hear on Holding Pattern, because sax can be very dangerous. We all know about saxophone crimes committed on
rock. Sexy sax man.
But the mellotron, it forces you to play the saxophone with just a finger or two. It's just a note, you can't bend it, you can't go crazy. It's a cool sound.
It's not going to be the opening credits of Saturday Night Live circa 87. You know,
Whether you like My Morning Jacket or not, those records are just the productions. It was amazing.
I
do like them.
Yeah, a bit of the similarities between his solo record and the sound wise.
Yes, and a couple of sounds. I think because
it kind of bleeds in there. Yeah. Well, you brought up your bio, and I want to hear about that too. So that was 07 or whatever, and I guess it's because of how it stacked out. Your bio came out then, and now is your solo record.
Right.
The bio is all about the past. You know, that's usually, do you have to do that to do this? You know, is that what it's like? Is because, well, if I write this, and I have to come to terms with my past, and I have to talk about my past, and once it's out of the way, I can stop it and be myself.
Right.
Was there ever that moment where that was even a thing?
No, but I don't know. I guess I feel, like, comfortable with where I am right now. It feels good. The bio, I don't even know if I ever would have written that book if someone hadn't emailed me from Penguin. I guess I had taken notes. I was thinking about it, but I got this email from this guy, a senior editor at Penguin, saying, "Have you ever thought about writing a book?" And I was like, "Well," I sent him a couple of chapters of tour diaries, and he's like, "This is great." And then a week later, there was a contract, and it was all
and suddenly
it was
suddenly
all happening.
You're bound. And I guess it's when I think of artists because. You know, you are tied to certain names. You're tied to certain bands. It's the way we know you. You know, when someone talks about you in a review, they're always going to say Galaxy 500. Yeah. You know, it's always going to be there.
That's fine. I mean, that's
sure. I mean, it's part of you, and I'm not knocking that or one way or another. But it almost seems like that. I don't know. For you, you seem like a person that's always trying to do something. You're always trying to do something else, but that's always kind of tugging you. So, like writing that bio almost sets you free. Or I would like to believe that's a nice romantic way of looking at music and everything.
I guess it did set me free because it annoyed so many people.
Did it?
No.
You get those phone calls? Like, that's not how that happened. That's not right.
I got a couple of those. Somebody told me, Neil Strauss, who used to write for the Times, he wrote a couple books, and he said, you know where the anger is going to come from? It's not going to be from, like, your ex-wife or bandmates or something. It's going to be just some little sentence about someone that you barely mention, and they're going to get furious at you. And that is true. There's a couple of people who are like, how dare you? And it's just like... if you read the book, I make fun of myself, too.
There's been some really great bios. I mean, it almost seemed like for a minute, everybody does a bio. Where's that point? Everybody does a bio.
Yeah, it's true.
There's been some really creative ones that come out with yours. I'm surprised Mike Doty didn't get killed for all the things he said in his bio.
I haven't read his.
It's kind of like everything's bad.
Right.
It's like if you're going to go that direction, just go all the way, you know? Just, just kill them all. This is an interesting way
there's
of doing it.
There's still time.
Well, I guess. You don't have to have much career left after this, I suppose.
But, I think I didn't really... When I was writing the book, I just wrote it for myself. I was just trying to put everything in there and not to sugarcoat anything. And I think it was only after it got sent off to the publisher, I was like, oh, gee, people are going to read this.
And then they read into it.
Yes, it's true.
I mean, you've got a passionate fan base. It's a cult fan base.
Right.
You've got that. Those people are a bit more passionate than, say, a Coldplay fan or something like that. But, we're not going to be talking about your unconscious coupling divorce all over
poor
the web.
Chris. Poor Chris and Gwyneth.
But they are they read into that stuff. There's a I got to hear. There's lyrics on your record. I'm going to bring
people
one
read
up.
Into the lyrics too.
Yeah. Let's it's on Love Is Not a Roof Against the Rain when you say, "What have I done with my life?" I mean, how can we not read into that? Like, you know, you say poor Chris, and we say, poor Dean, what's going on here? Should we be worried about
what
Dean?
Have I done with my
what
life?
What have I done? And then you're talking about being stuck in a holding
pattern.
And then
I say, what have I done with the keys, yeah, which I borrowed from someone's poem, I think. So it's supposed to be comical, really.
Yeah.
But I was kind of walking the line in that song. Does this come across as too serious or not? Because you try to be... One tries to be introspective without whining.
Sure, sure.
And that's the line that I try to walk, and because I don't like it when people cross that line.
So you don't
line
want to be Morrissey. Exactly.
He can be funny, too.
We love Morrissey. Yes. Great sense of humor. But, you know, he's the king whiner. We love
him. I like a lot of his pronouncements, except when he, you know, compares meat eaters to Nazis. And then he's lost me.
Have you read his book?
In fact, the most famous Nazi was a vegetarian.
That's true.
Yes.
Wow. I wonder if anybody's done that back.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
I have not read his book. Have you?
No, I haven't yet. It's sitting on the bookshelf. It's thick.
Yeah, they say it's mostly dull, but I bet there's some good stuff in there.
Yeah, I'm sure there's some good stuff in there. As fans, we want to know. But that's the thing. Like, you take a lyric like that, and you know, for a fan, we do read into that stuff. And you, as the artist, you know, it's that moment. How do you handle that? And do you worry about it?
Like, do I worry about my life?
Yeah. Do you worry about how people are going to take your life and what they're going to do with that on their own terms? Because your life is your own life, and you can shut the door, but they're all still thinking about it. It's a weird relationship is what I'm getting to.
Yeah. Well, again, I would go back to the book if I was going to worry about it. That would have been the time to worry. Not so much with lyrics. The kind of cryptic anyway. And I feel like writing nonfiction is a lot tougher, and that takes some guts to express yourself clearly and take an opinion, because then a lot of people get mad at you, right, or people judge you. And,
right.
But what is it? A friend of mine told me that those who know you don't judge you, and those who judge you don't know you.
Uh-huh. Wise words.
Wise words.
Learned words.
My friend George.
We'll end on film, because I know you've got the history with film scores, too. I do find it interesting that a lot of bands, most bands that I've ever known, especially smaller bands, are like, well, all of our songs could fit in a movie. And that seems to be the thing. Like,
right.
Like, you know, well, I like my songs, so I you know, it's that. But I feel like you've probably figured out the secret. All songs don't really work.
No.
Yeah.
No, that's true. That's the first thing you learn when you're scoring film, is that the film is in charge and you are not.
Yeah.
And your song might be good, but it's all a question of, does it do what the film needs to have done at that point? Does it move the story forward, or does it make it seem more exciting, or does it slow it down and make it dull? And there's a great documentary about Philip Glass, made about 5 years ago, I think, and he's scoring a film for Woody Allen. And obviously Philip Glass has done a lot of film scores,
sure,
but he plays this piece of music for Woody, and Woody's like, well, it's a nice piece of music. We'll put it up against picture, and we'll see if it works, or maybe it won't work at all. It's just everyone goes through that.
It doesn't matter who you are.
Yeah.
Are you going to be doing more of that? That was such a nice part of your career, and it's been enjoyed a lot since. So.
You know, I've recently moved to Los Angeles. There's a lot of musicians out there looking to do that.
Mm-hmm. So, a bit more competitive.
Brent and I have been lucky, because we got to, you know, work with Noah Baumbach on some of his films, and to do this Andy Warhol screen test project. And whenever you get a chance to work with a really good director, that's exciting, even if he's dead. This Warhol was not around to give us direction, but
it's probably for the better.
I think for everyone, that's true. It's not like most, so many, you know, 98% of films are not good. So if you, I think actors, anyone who's involved with a good film, it's like, thank God,
just get to be there, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess there's a, we could have been looking at the Squid and Whale completely different, you know?
Yeah.
Well, the music was good, but it was a great film on top of that. You know,
that's it. It's a good exercise anyway, actually. Yeah. It's good to work.
Yeah. Well, we're happy that you're working, and I'm loving the new record, and, you know, hopefully this won't be the last Dean Wareham record.
No,
you know, wherever it goes, so it won't take another 30 years or whatever to get back in there. And if it does, we'll do this interview again in 30 years exactly the same way.
Thank you
so much. And we'll be right back right after this. Hey, it's Kyle Meredith. Are you ready to lose weight? With Effecty, getting access to powerful, personalized GLP-1 weight loss medications has never been easier or more affordable. These medications work by regulating appetite and blood sugar, helping you lose weight in a sustainable, science-backed way. And getting started is simple. Fill out a short medical questionnaire, then connect with a licensed provider through a quick chat-based telehealth consultation. If you're eligible, your prescription gets shipped straight to your door. No hassle, no waiting rooms.
With transparent pricing, no hidden fees, and no membership required, Effecty is committed to making proven weight loss treatments accessible to everyone. And no matter where you live, Effecty makes it easy to access GLP-1 treatments. The entire process is online and remote, so you can start your weight loss journey from the comfort of your home without the hassle of commuting or long wait times. Whether you're in a major city or a small town, you can access top-tier care from licensed professionals at your convenience. So, are you ready to level up your weight loss game? Right now, my listeners can get $50 off GLP-1 weight loss treatments at Effecty.com with code KMW at checkout. That's Effecty.com, EFFECTY.com, and use the code KMW to get $50 off your first month of GLP-1 weight loss treatments. No hassles, no memberships, and no hidden fees. So what are you waiting for? Get started today.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again. You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with a rewind of my interviews with Dean Wareham and Britta Phillips. And part two heads up just a couple years past this Dean Wareham interview in 2014 to my chat with Britta Phillips in 2016 to talk about Luck or Magic, her stunning debut that toggled between torch songs and simmering synth pop, and how tracks like Do It Last, playfully, maybe darkly, flip gendered expectations of obsession in love songs. She also opened up about the nerves of writing about Dean and then playing the songs for him. Part two of this Rewind episode, it's Kyle Meredith with Britta Phillips.
Oh, thanks.
And really very much in love with this record, Luck or Magic.
Oh, thanks so much.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to have a very first solo record, that's a hell of a solo record right there. That's a hell of a first hit.
Well, I've had a long time to think about it, I suppose.
A very long ramp up to this one. I mean, does it really feel the same or different, I guess, because you've been obviously making music for so many years at this point, and you've been a part of so many projects, and you've put out so many albums within those projects. You know, does this actually feel like something completely different to you?
It is very different because I'm up front. You know, it's funny because I'm a performer. That's what I do. And I've even done some acting, but I'm kind of a shy person at the same time, mm-hmm. which is, I think, partially why I enjoy performing. But doing a solo album is really, I mean, I'm definitely feel more exposed. So it's just more intense. Mm-hmm. It's great, but it's very different. It's not as comfortable, say. I really enjoy singing the songs and live, you know. It gives me great pleasure. Performing, I think I love playing in bands, but I feel like at the end of every tour, I always have this itch to sing or sing more. So this definitely scratches that itch.
With everything that's going on right now, I mean, how hectic has it been for you then to launch what is your first solo record and all the work that goes behind that while being in the middle of this grand reunion tour and everything that goes along with that?
Well, I mean, aside from jet lag and whatever the downsides of travel is, the Luna reunion for me is quite fun and easy. You know, I just show up with my bass and play these great songs. So it's, and you know how the songs are going to go over with the Luna crowd. So there's no nerves. It's just fun. It's easy, mm-hmm. and we're all enjoying playing together more than ever. We all appreciate each other. So it's there really is no pressure there because we're not on that wheel where we have a new album to promote and we're worrying about how it will do. It's just kind of in the moment. and then, I mean, there was a lot of work. It's so weird because I've been doing this for, I don't know, decades, but it's the first time I've done this. So it was such a learning experience for me, the promoting and the business side of it. And then I had this pledge campaign, so I was not comfortable with the self-promotion at first, but it's easy. Yeah. You got used to it.
You know,
now I'm
you
shameless
in
tweeting.
Yeah, when it's something you believe in, it makes it easier.
Yes, yes. I mean, I always believed in it, but it's just sort of, like, hey, look at me now, and look at me now. There's something really yucky about that, but, it's just part of it.
Yeah. But it usually is. I mean, it just seems like, I don't know, and this might be complete perception, but you're just in one of these great spots because you seemingly have so many outlets that it sort of takes the pressure off having to do any of them.
Yeah, and I really don't feel pressure. Maybe it's because I'm older and I've done stuff that I'm happy with, so I feel like I don't really have to prove anything, but I just want to do it because I feel like I can contribute something and something I really love and enjoy. So I'm not looking to sell a million records, although that would be lovely.
So while we're here, though, standout track that I probably listened to more than any is Do It Last.
Oh, good. I'm so glad you said that one.
Let's talk about those lyrics, though. That's I just feel like, man, that's, I don't know. What's going on there? Let's start with that. What's going on in this song? I'll let you do this.
Well, I mean, it's a few things. It's kind of, to me, there's a little sense of humor in it. Mm-hmm. it's a love song. It kind of started out, I was writing it as this kind of straight kind of love song. And then that lyric, I don't know, I think it was just a sign that I saw somewhere that said, do it best. And then I was rhyming with that. And do it last, I was like, oh, that's kind of dark. Mm-hmm. And almost just, it can kind of tease out those darker feelings of possession that you have in a relationship. They're there, you know.
Yeah.
I don't act on them, and I hope most people don't. Otherwise, it makes life unpleasant. But we all have, these darker feelings in love, and I just wanted to tease that out and express it in a way that was fun and sexy and kind of empowering.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like there are songs like The Stones Under My Thumb, that kind of song. And I felt like maybe guys in rock bands have sung about these kind of feelings in a sexy way, but not women, because it's sort of you have to be chill as a woman. If you do anything possessive, it's shrill or shrewish or just not attractive. So I wanted to kind of do something that was, like that.
Right. It's funny, though.
And fun. It's fun. It's a spell, But it did start out just as like a straight love song without that part of it. But I thought it would be fun to include that and not have it be so sweet.
Yeah. That's got a great twist. I mean, I had been listening to the Lemonade album quite a bit.
Uh-huh.
My wife had been playing
it.
Oh,
yeah.
And it
cool.
was one of those moments where it's that same kind of, I don't know, it had the same kind of fire in it that I'd been hearing that, which is what drew me to it to begin with, because, I've been enjoying that one in the same way, and it was just like, man, that is great. But, there's the and it goes along to this, and I'll ask a question that I am certain that you've been asked before many, many times, mm-hmm. and so slight apologies to that, but you are married to another songwriter, and there is a certain romance from the outside of that, that when I hear a song like this, I go, man, how often is it that you guys write songs separately that you then have to say, listen, let me explain this to you before you listen to this?
Well, the thing is, it's funny because, you know, of course, that one and Luck or Magic are both, you know, about mainly about my husband. And I was kind of sweating when I played them for him. I didn't tell him, but I've kind of just, it's funny. I probably say more about this in song than I do because we're both a little, I don't know, we're both a little reserved. Mm-hmm. So it's a great way to write about this stuff, though, because I feel like they're both passionate and romantic, but they have that edge, which I wanted to put in there, that's different than, say, a Dean and Britta song. But he likes the album, so I was I was relieved.
It's helpful. It almost seems like unintentional couples therapy if you need it. You know, if you wanted to take that route, it's there.
That's kind of what we do. You know, I feel like it's funny. You know, a song. I assume other songwriters are like this too. They're more eloquent in song than they are in conversation. Yeah, I was nervous.
Yeah.
And then my mom, when my mom heard it, she was like, oh, my God. I was like, it's okay. It's a song. You know?
What's sort of plays as the centerpiece to the record, but your cover of Drive. When I heard that, and I know it's been talked about a lot, that cover, and it's just this beautiful reading of the song, and suddenly realized, like, that song is just one of those perfect songs. Because you put your own stamp to it, but that melody is such a strong melody to begin with. It's like, man, you know, and it just kind of got lost in, you know, Hit Parade to me as far as like really dissecting and looking at that song critically, because it's always been there for me. I mean, you know, I was born.
Yeah, you know, for me, I was a fan of the Cars early stuff. So by the time that song came out, I didn't really care about that song at the time. So when Scott Hardkiss suggested I cover it, I was like, oh, Drive, really? But I'm, you know, I respected his instincts and I was like, let's give it a go. And I was really surprised and impressed by the song. Like discovering it as a song, even though I knew it.
Closing up, just out of curiosity, I know it's you mentioned it in another interview, but is there a Luna covers album on the way? Did I read that right? Is that your next project?
Yes. We're about halfway through. We've recorded, I think, 5 or 6 songs, so we'll record probably 6 or 7 more. I think they're all going to be covers, but you never know.
Look at that tease.
I don't know. We'll see. There's some talk about maybe some space jams that might turn into something. I don't know.
Yeah. So the reunion isn't exactly over yet. It's rolls on.
Yeah, no. Yeah. It's just it's a no pressure reunion. It's all fun.
That's cool.
Just, you know, it's not for business purposes. Although we do get paid, but it's that's the way to keep it.
Right.
I think
right.
You know, is not to have it come down to this a money pressure.
Well, I'm enjoying the hell out of all of it right now. So it's a fun time to be a fan. I'll say that.
Great. So glad to hear.
Yeah, and thank you so much for everything and for talking to me today. And take care out there. I hope to catch a show sometime soon.
Yes, thank you so much.
All right.
Thanks.
All right, bye.
Bye.
And we'll be right back right after this. All right, welcome back. Time for part 3 of this Rewind episode. Now we're heading up to just a year later in 2017 when Dean jumped on the phone with me. We talked about Luna getting officially back together with a record called A Sentimental Education. It was a covers-heavy return that mined overlooked corners of Dylan, The Stones, and even Velvet Underground's Doug Yule era. Dean explains why a reformation only made sense without pressure, Why, sometimes the easiest way forward is an instrumental EP with cheeky titles like March of the Trolls. It's part three of this Rewind episode, Kyle Meredith with Dean Wareham.
Luna is back together, and it is a different world than I think when you guys left it. And I started chuckling because it seems like Luna is part of the story that a lot of bands had, where you had your early critical acclaim, and then it's sort of just slowly, you know, the audience slowly disappeared as the band went on until, you know, for whatever reasons, you guys called it a day.
Yeah.
And then you go away, and while you're away, everything happens, and new generations find you. And I thought, maybe every band should go away after 10 years.
Well, that's probably true. Probably every band needs a break. Yeah, for us, I don't think, I mean, the live audience didn't go away. I think part of it, in a way, was driven by, like, a record contract, where it's like every time you made a record, you were rewarded with you got paid. Let's put it that way. You got paid.
Right.
And in a way, I think bands can kind of get in an unhealthy thing where you're making a record because you have a contract that says that it's time for you to make another record, instead of making a record when you're really good and ready to do it.
I don't know that part of the story. Like, what was the reason why you guys finally said, no, we can do this again. We can be Luna again.
It was kind of the 10-year anniversary of the band breaking up had come up. And I guess that number kind of makes you think, like, well, it's been 10 years. And then also, actually, I got an email from a Spanish promoter saying, I hear that there's a rumor that Luna is getting back together. Is that true? And it wasn't true. I said to him, it's not true, but it could be true. Anyway, he made an offer. It wasn't going to, like, change our lives, but it kind of looked like fun. And since we all get along, I broached the subject, and everyone said, "Yes, let's do it."
It's funny only in the context of you saying that when you have a record deal and there's money on the line and you feel like you have to do it, that sort of pushes it away. But when you go away and the money comes back on the line, then it's like, no, well, now it's time to do this again.
Well, that's true. I mean, that's another reason why I guess bands get back together, and if you have a following, it can.
Oh yeah, I mean, there's no reason I'm
can make a living, but we wouldn't do it if we. I mean, some people are getting, like, you know, huge amounts of money that even though they hate each other, they're like, oh, we're going to do this even though we hate each other. Mm-hmm. And it's not like that with us. It's.
And I don't want to downplay it. I'm obviously very excited that Luna's doing anything. I'm always happy when you do anything anyway, but especially when you can put it in the context of something that, you know, a lot of us do have great memories of. Which, you know, it's sort of, I guess, why, and that leads into this record, which, you know, I'm holding in my hands, beautiful little CD package here of a Sentimental Education. And so the first disc is all covers, and which, you know, you've been doing a lot of covers through the years, especially you and Britta, and so that part's not surprising. But I did grimace a little. I was like, but man, there's a second disc of instrumentals. That means you guys are working on something. What kept you guys from doing the real I'm sorry, not the real album. That sounds horrible. But what happened from doing an originals record? Yeah.
I thought this would be easier. So, you know, I sound like both lazy and money grubbing, but I just thought after a long way away, this would be like an easy way for us to test the waters and do some recording. And it's true, it is easier. I mean, that said, we worked pretty hard on this record, but I think I thought it was maybe something we could do in like a week, but it isn't. We did it on and off over a period of a year. But it was relatively easy, and it was fun. And then we're doing all these covers. And then kind of towards the end, guitarist Sean said, well, we can't just put out an album of covers. We should, you know, offer people something else. Let's do some instrumentals. And that's relatively easy, too. Writing the words is the hard part,
right?
I think.
Right.
And also, it was like both of these things, an album of covers and an EP of instrumentals, that's two things we've never done before. And so, I don't know. I kind of thought both of those ideas were perhaps more interesting than just, oh, the band's back together and they're writing new songs.
Right.
I don't know.
It does.
When bands reform, I'm always resistant to going out and buying their. I really like the Buzzcocks and Mission of Burma, but I didn't go check out their new records when they got back together.
It's been a good year for that, though. Like, I can, like, Slow Dive, excellent record. Ride, Excellent record.
Yes, I like the Slow Dive stuff. I haven't heard the Ride one.
So it is possible. But I'll tell you, you know, looking at these instrumentals, it makes me have to, of course, pay attention to those titles quite a bit more. Looking at Ides of March of the Trolls, and all I can think about is all the trolls that I see every single day on the internet. And it's like...
I thought March of the Trolls was funny.
Yeah.
There's a classical piece called March of the Trolls, which I always thought was a funny title. And then it kind of has a new meaning today, Trolls.
Right.
And then I did like a Wheel of Fortune type word game to that. Ides of March is, you know, the 15th of March is when Caesar was killed.
Mm-hmm. Are the titles, all the titles just like having fun? I mean, do any of them mean anything specifically to the instrumental piece?
Okay. No, I guess they don't. What are the titles? GTX 3.
Yeah.
You know, Sean wrote that one, and he had an effects pedal called the GTX 3. I think it's called the, or maybe it's just called GTX, and it was the third version he'd done, something like that. Yeah. A Place of Greatest Safety. I borrowed that from a book about the French Revolution, and it means the grave, a place of greatest safety. That's what it is.
Yeah.
That's where we're all going.
Uh-huh. That's...
And then a couple of those instrumentals are like new versions of things that we'd done for the Luna documentary, Tell Me, Do You Miss Me?
Mm-hmm.
So that one, Spanish Odyssey, that plays in the movie while Sean is like wandering around a Spanish town, drinking and getting lost. And same with Around and Around. That's in the documentary. Yeah.
Yeah.
It is.
No, it's like I said, it is. It's nice to hear. I mean, it's a nice tease. That's what I keep it, because I put it on a few times, and it is. Yeah, I sort of put it on right. In the background as instrumentals sort of happen with me. But yeah. It wasn't just a one listen and done, you know? It wasn't like that.
Yeah, I mean, we tried to make them melodic. We kind of worked on them. That's kind of, it's an interesting challenge to be like, well, okay, we're going to do this for this 3 or 4 minute piece, and it's not going to have any words in it. So you play the play a melody on another instrument, or... You know, sometimes we're in the studio working on something and it all sounds really great and putting a vocal on it ruins it, you know, because it takes away all that space.
Yeah.
And sometimes it makes it better, but sometimes it doesn't.
With the covers record then, I noticed something interesting, like, you know, there are a few popular artists on here and they're great selections that you went for, but it's almost like you went for the artist's least popular moments to take the songs from, which I don't know, it was kind of like,
right.
Like when I look at The Cure, like that first album, it's a classic, you know, it's got Boys Don't Cry, but not a lot of people have that album. You know, it was like a few albums later that they really, really started taking off. Dylan, that's
yeah.
One of my top five Dylan songs of all time, but it's from his 80s period, which is consistently looked over. That's not a big Rolling Stones album. And it's like every one that I went through there, it's almost like you went for the
yeah.
Least popular moment to kind of take a selection from. Velvet Underground was another great.
Yes. Certainly that's their least popular album because it's when Lou Reed has quit the band. So, in fact, there's no Velvet Underground members on that except for Doug Yule. He was the only one left.
Yeah.
But Doug Yule was a great talent too. I think he doesn't get his due for what he did. You know, he came into the Velvet Underground on that for that third and fourth album.
Mm-hmm.
I think you listen to this like vocal harmonies and this more complex chords and all of that's obviously him.
I mean, you guys,
he wasn't involved when the band reunited.
Yeah, I know you're well versed in more than a lot of folks in Lou and the gang. I think that's what makes this even more interesting. Is I've always thought those records were good, and it's sort of you can't admit that to some people. You can't admit that,
right?
You know, without getting into an argument. But I'm really happy to see someone who really does understand the catalog kind of speaking up for that, because, you know, aside from the name,
I don't think I'd ever heard the Squeeze album, which is that's the name of the album they did after Lou had left, until it's now on Spotify. So now I don't have to, because every time I looked at it, I'm like, I'm not going to spend $30 to buy a Dutch import of this not Velvet Underground record. Spotify.
Works out for all of us.
I don't know if the Rolling Stones Metamorphosis album is on Spotify or not, but it's that's an interesting record too. It's only kind of a Rolling Stones album because some of the tracks, it's different music, like Jimmy Page plays on it. sometimes it's a different drummer. And a lot of the songs are demos that Jagger and Richards were writing for other people to do. So Walking Through the Sleepy City, which we do, is written for the Mighty Avengers. Mm-hmm. But I love that record anyway. Yeah. I guess the best known song on it is Out of Time, which was, again, written for someone else, but then the Stones recorded it themselves.
It's just such an interesting selection, I guess, of the songs. And that's what made it fun, because nothing against popular covers. You guys have done those in the past, too. But I think there is a sense that if it was going to be a covers record, that I really wasn't familiar with much of it, you know. So I guess it's the best of both worlds to me.
What our friend Paul was saying, that he was like, people aren't even going to recognize a lot of these songs. And in fact, I wouldn't have recognized. I mean, sometimes, I don't know, it's just, you stumble on something. The Mink DeVille track is from a Live at CBGB's album. It was very hard to decipher the lyrics. Because he's dead, I guess. And in fact, I think probably nobody actually knows the lyrics. It's like Louie Louie. But the song is Let Me Dream If I Want To. That much was clear. That something about fishing. I don't know what he's talking about. I read somewhere that's about like amphetamines, which makes sense.
Did any of these get a major overhaul, or do you guys just try to play them sort of straight?
Well, I think Fire in Cairo sounds pretty different. Mm-hmm. That sounds more like it doesn't sound new wave anymore. It just sounds like Luna, or maybe a bit like the Feelies or something, doing the Cure. The Dylan song was just that's just hard to sing, because I mean, you mentioned it's from one of his 80s records, but it's from the Mercy. Kind of, the record that he made that people were like, oh, okay, maybe he's not the, right. He doesn't suck so bad after all. It was kind of a comeback. It was the best one he'd done in a while. Mm-hmm. But trying to sing it, I'm like, wow, I don't even think, like listening to it, I had listened to a bootleg of him doing it and his studio version, like, I don't even think he knew what he was doing when he did it. He's kind of making it up as it goes along.
That's one of those...
The phrasing and the melody.
You know, the power of soundtracks and everything. I mean, I might have heard Oh Mercy, but it was, of course, when High Fidelity came out and they used it in that one. And that's such a song that is a movie moment for me, that it just resonated forever after that.
Right.
You know, it's one of those greats.
I got to go watch that, because you know what? I've never, ever seen that movie, but now a couple of people have told me most of the time is in the key scene in that.
Yeah.
But it's a great lyric. It's a great. He's talking about how he's over this girl. And he doesn't think about her at all. She's like, at all. Except each verse ends with a line most of the time. So you think, well, actually, he's still pretty broken up about it, right?
Well, I dare ask, what happens now with the Lunar Reunion?
Well, we're going to keep... We don't know. We do know we're going to keep touring for this year and into next year. You know, we had a rehearsal yesterday here in Los Angeles, and it was really fun. And that's kind of the nice thing. I think back to our rehearsals in like 2004 for the last album, and they were all just kind of like miserable and things were tense. But yeah, things are like fun. Yeah. We sit there, tell stories, do a little bit of rehearsing. It's good times.
Yeah, I'm happy to hear it. Are you up to anything else noteworthy for the end of the interview here?
Well, you know what? I do have another album recorded with a friend of mine. He records as Cheval Sombre. That's French for the Dark Horse. It's an album of, and actually it's more covers. They're like Western songs from like old Hollywood cowboy movies. Oh, cool. He sings half of it and I'd sing it. So that'll come out sometime next year.
Yeah. That's cool. It's an interesting take.
And actually, it's been finished for a long time, but I just thought I thought let's put the Lunar record out first.
I'm sort of glad you did, again, selfishly, I will say.
Yes. But we'll be in Louisville. First time ever that Luna has performed in Louisville.
Well, I cannot wait for that. And, you know, I'll be there and we'll be there. And, well, Dean, it was nice catching up. Like I said, I'll...
Thank you for doing this.
Yeah, and I'll see you guys when you're here in town.
See you in a few months. Okay.
And there you go. My thanks to Dean Wareham and Britta Phillips. And, of course, my thanks to you for checking out the episode. Hit that subscribe button before you get out of here to keep up with all the interviews that I put out every single week. Spotify, Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org. Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcast from. You can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. Don't forget to give the series a rating and leave a review while you're at it. Those always help out so much. After that, you can head over to WFPK.org, where I do a show Monday through Friday, starting 6 p.m. Eastern. It's 4 hours of classics from the 80s and 90s. You get the best in new music, bonus interviews, lots of music news. One of my recent shows featured some classics and favorites from folks like Neil Young, Penetration, Bad, Bad, Not Good, Queen, Violent Femmes, The Cure, Tracy Bonham, Counting Crows, Fox Warren, Air, The Afghan Whigs, and my interview with Brandon Flowers of The Killers. That's what you get when you tune in weeknights, 6 p.m. Eastern at WFPK.org. Consequence has your music and film news. You can also find me on any of the social media sites. The address is always at Kyle Meredith. I do hope you like and follow along. And that does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair has got style tips for every home. This is Nicole Byer, helping you make those rooms flyer. Today's style tip: when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild! Like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Ooh, fierce! This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to Ramp.com and love finance again. Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to Ramp.com and love finance again.